It's really knowing yourself, knowing your needs, and also listening to the other person's needs.
Hi, welcome to Resonate, Conversations and Life Lessons from Rancho La Puerta. I'm your host, Barry. My guest today is an educator, a counselor, a politician, and an author. Ruth Nemzoff has a master's degree in counseling from Columbia, a doctor of education from Harvard with an emphasis on social policy. Ruth served in the New Hampshire House of Representatives for 6 years and then served as the Deputy Commissioner of Health and Welfare for New Hampshire. She also taught in the government department at Bentley College. She has authored 2 books that focus on family relationships. Her first book, Don't Bite Your Tongue, How to Foster Rewarding Relationships with Your Adult Children. And her second book, Don't Roll Your Eyes, Making In-Laws into Family. I know we are all children, and some of us have children of our own. Personally, I have a recently married adult child, so I'm certainly looking forward to some of Ruth's perspectives. Hi, Ruth. Welcome to Resonate.
Good to see you again.
It's so great to have you. Now, where are you coming from today? Are you back east?
Yes, I'm back in Boston.
Boston. Okay, so you're 3 hours ahead of me. So I do want to talk. You have a very interesting background because you have 2 books out, and the first one was published when you were, was it 65?
65, yes.
Wow. So you came to the writing a little bit later than some people, kind of like...
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I say I'm not a writer, just a lucky person who got a book contract.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's amazing. So, but you were originally a teacher, is that correct?
Originally, yes.
And what did you teach?
I taught 5th grade.
Okay. And
then I was a guidance counselor.
Okay.
And then in those days, they wouldn't hire you if you were pregnant. Mm. And the only job I could get was helping people with disabilities get jobs. And I found my calling.
Wow.
And I set up, you want more? I set up Goodwill's job placement and then became a legislator in the New Hampshire legislature, part of the leadership, Deputy Commissioner of Health and Welfare. Then I became a professor and then an author.
Wow. And you have your PhD, your doctorate, is it from Harvard?
It is.
Wow. And that's in education, correct?
Yes. It's actually administration, policy, and planning.
Okay. So, but you worked on social policies a lot, right?
Yes, I did.
So, yeah, you have a very diverse background. So, and then your books that you've done are about mostly family kind of relationship stuff, correct?
Yes. Yes, because those were the issues I worked on in the legislature, in my work with persons with disabilities. I was always working with the whole family. Mm-hmm. And then in my doctorate, for my doctorate, I wrote about mothers of children with disabilities.
Wow. Okay. And so the book that I'm really intrigued with is called Don't Bite Your Tongue, How to Foster Rewarding Relationships with Your Adult Children.
Yes, that's it.
Where'd you get the title, Don't Bite Your Tongue?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, the publisher picked the Don't Bite Your Tongue part of the title. Mm-hmm. And as a first-time author, I didn't have much say. Mm-hmm. And the real message of the book is think about how to say it, what to say it, when to say it. And if I were to write it today, I'd say in what methodology to say it.
Right.
And I named it, the colon is mine, after the colon, which is how to foster rewarding relationships with your adult children. And first, I use the word foster, rather, because I can't make guarantees. I can help you fertilize the soil, but not make a guarantee that your relationships will improve. And I was looking for rewarding relationships, not perfect relationships, just rewarding. And then I use the oxymoron adult children because to us they are the children in our bones and our thoughts. They're still our children, but they are also adults. And so I just felt it captured what the book was about.
You know, on the reverse side of that coin too, I think that sometimes kids forget that we're adults too. We're not just parents. I mean, that's one role that we play, but you know, you get pigeon-toed into these roles and yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
So how did you become an author? Because you said an accidental author, if it will.
Yes. Well, I had, after I was in the legislature and the governor who appointed me deputy commissioner, not only lost the office, but he died and my political capital went from big to nil.
Yeah, yeah.
I moved to Massachusetts and I went back to my doctoral advisor and she said, go and go to Wellesley as a scholar, a visiting scholar, and it'll all work out from there. And I did that. And then I gave a speech about my work and another scholar came up to me. And by this point, I was a scholar at Brandeis, came up to me and said, I'd really like to write a book with you on parenting. And she was well published. So I said, opportunity's knocking. Okay, right. Take it.
Right.
And I did. And we tried for 4 years to sell it. And all the young people in the book publishing, you know, the editors said, well, my parents don't parent me. And they were in their 20s and 30s. And meanwhile, I was going to parties and talking to people on buses and trains and whatever. And they always talked about their adult children. And they were still parenting, even though the children thought they weren't.
Right. Yeah. So you have four children of your own?
I have children, yes, and four in-law children.
So you have like the experience from a personal and also from your work that you've done.
I do.
In the public.
And my children are 16 years apart, top to bottom.
Wow.
So one Kenneth's husband, I always say.
What did I heard you say? I listened to an interview and where you said that the first child is like the perfect child, and by the time you get to the last child, you just hope they can afford their own psychiatrist.
Yes. The first child, you think you can raise the perfect person. By the last child, you realize there is no perfect person.
Right.
And, you know, they'll be just fine.
Right. So what do you think are some of the challenges between parents and their adult children? I'm sure there's lots of them, but some common ones.
Some common ones. They're just really, you said at the beginning, recognizing that we're people also, and that we have other roles and other lives. And how do we incorporate our past caring, our past history, into the lives of each other without bossing each other around, but particularly the adults bossing the children and the children having to react to the parents. So one of the problems is that often a parent will make a comment and the adult child sees it as a command, because back when he was little, it was a command,
right.
But now it's not a command. It's an opinion. And so that is very hard to sort out. I think it's also very hard to, and you know, adults differ on various continua, choice and obligation, intimacy and how intimate we want to be. And each one of those continua that we disagree on, adults do disagree, you know, but how do we negotiate where we together want to be on whatever disagreement you have?
Yeah, and I mean, disagreement doesn't mean that you don't love just as much, right? So,
Absolutely.
And the other thing that comes into play now, I mean, in your second book, it's called "Don't Roll Your Eyes: Making In-Laws into Family."
Yes.
Because when our adult children get married, then suddenly we have this whole other family involved.
Right. And of course, here's where culture plays a huge part. Even if you marry the boy or girl next door, and that is that different families have different expectations of how that greater family will interact. I always say some people are, you know, at the wedding say, great, nice meeting you. I'll see you at the grandkids' graduation. Mm-hmm. And other families expect that you will see each other on a regular basis. You'll be there to share holidays. You'll be there to deal with crises. So negotiating that can be difficult.
Right. And yeah, whose family do you spend the holidays with? And
exactly.
I used to joke with my my sister, because if you grew up in the same home, you're subject like day in, day out to the same parenting style, the same right. customs, the same everything. And I mean, the only relationship that I think could really work out with is easy would be to marry one of your siblings, because they know they kind of know all the stuff. And, you know, you don't know what's going on with. Yeah. What's going on?
Unfortunately, that's a taboo. There are a lot.
I'm just saying, you know.
Medical implications. But I do think it's such a great joke, because it is indeed true.
Yeah, because I mean, I find it amazing. You take these two people that grew up, you know, so much of our personalities are incorporated when you're younger. Take these two people that are completely different and throw them together and say, "Hey, make it work." And you both have all these armies behind you, your family doing something different sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, what are some of the personal experiences you've had that have been able to bridge?
Well, I think curiosity. Mm. So I think that from the very beginning, I realized that these people were from, you know, different families. Mm-hmm. And so trying to find out what their family customs were, mm-hmm. Inviting them to share my family customs. And over time, getting to know each other and getting to learn what skills they had that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. I've really benefited from all the wonderful skills. And certainly my grandchildren have benefited. Right. So, for example, I'm not particularly good at calming babies. They sort of sense my energy and they want to just... Yeah. And the three of the other grandparents are just, they're baby whisperers. They just, you know, everything, just the minute they're held, they're quiet.
Right. Right.
That's just one example, but I can give you 1,000 examples of some like to play games. I don't like to play games, you know, things like that.
You clearly have to communicate that with your children, right? So that they understand that it's not personal, and it's not that you don't like your grandchildren. It's just that you don't, certain things you do well, certain things you don't.
Right. Yes, exactly. And be willing to even try. I'm willing to try the things I don't do well, but I really excel at other things.
I would imagine that some of the things, I was reading a statistic that 40 to 45% of first marriages end in divorce, and then second and third marriages is up to 70% end in divorces. So that certainly would change the dynamic.
And that is very complex. And it's complex for several reasons. First of all, if there are children involved, you need to keep good relationships with the other person, the other parent, whether it's the custodial parent or not, because you don't know what's going to happen in life.
Right.
And you may be called upon to help the custodial parent or the non-custodial parent who then becomes the custodial parent. Mm-hmm. And you may also want to have access to your grandchild. So from that point of view, it's complex. But it's also complex because very often your child wants you to make a choice between them and this, quote, horrible person they divorced. Not all divorces are acrimonious, but when they are. But you may love that person. You've grown to really love that person. And as adults, we get to choose our friends. And it's important to just say, look, I love you, honey. I'm sorry the marriage didn't work out, but I will have a relationship with Susie or Billy or whatever the spouse was named.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to deal with, to talk about it too, because their sides, when you pick sides, I feel like no one wins, especially the kids.
Right. And as parents, nobody knows anybody else's relationships.
Right.
They're quite personal, and you don't know if your own child was the cause of the divorce. And in fact, that can be extremely difficult if, let's say, your child had an illness or, you know, was addicted to something. Mm-hmm. That spouse, that currently a divorced spouse, might be very angry with you,
right?
Because they feel it was your terrible parenting that did it.
And you mentioned earlier there's cultural differences as well, and I think in our Western, like the USA, it's always been different. But I was reading statistically now that such a large percentage of adult children actually still live at home now, and that's a kind of a new thing in the last 10 years or so because of economic reasons and student loans and all of those kind of things. So that certainly changes the end. It must be much harder to not parent an adult child when they're living in the house in the same conditions that they were when they were teenagers.
Right. Maybe even in the same room with the same posters.
Yeah.
What I would like to say is I do in Don't Bite Your Tongue have a whole chapter on moving back home.
Okay.
It's really important to make the conditions clear. First of all, are you paying rent? Are you providing services? Are you not having to do anything? You know, what are the rules in terms of cleanliness? I have an example in the book in Don't Bite Your Tongue about a mother who said, "Look, I don't care how you keep your room; that's your space. And I don't care if you fold the laundry or not, but you cannot leave it in the laundry room." Mm-hmm. And in terms of the public space, I don't like dirty dishes, dirty coffee cups. That the public space in this house must be kept to my standard. What you do with your where you live, you can do what you want. They negotiated that.
Right.
I think some of it is also understanding the words. So, for example, if you were staying at my house, I might say to you, "What time will you be home?" And you would tell me. And I'd say, "Great, I'll leave the light on," right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a child, you might say, "Mom, it's none of your business. I'm 18 now, or I'm over 18, you know.
Right.
So sometimes the listener hears a different message that is said. So you not only need to negotiate the rules of the house, but you need to have a way of rethinking, you know, what's not working here and what is working well.
Yeah. So that made me think of my daughter's a psychoanalyst. And I think that her favorite word is boundaries. And that sounds a little bit like what you were talking about. But
well, in a way it is. On the other hand, if you look around the world, boundaries are where all the problems are. Right?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that is interesting.
So what do we mean by boundaries? There are physical boundaries, which was what we were just talking about. Mm. But there are also emotional boundaries.
Right.
But they will change. So let's give an example in actually my own family. My mother-in-law was at the end quite limited and needed help. Now, normally a daughter doesn't necessarily see her mother naked after a certain age. Mm. But that was part of the job of taking care of her, right? Mm-hmm. Was helping her dress. So there's where a boundary gets blurred. And in families, because the situation changes so often and illness happens, boundaries get blurred frequently. Mm-hmm. Boundaries get blurred, let's take it economically. Mm-hmm. Usually in our society, the young couple has a budget and the older couple has a budget. But things happen. One loses a job, the other loses a job. And then you might blur those boundaries. So I think it's the way the word boundary is used.
Is there another word that you would prefer using, do you think?
These are the things that make me uncomfortable. When you do such and such, this makes me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you ask about Bob and I going to have children, that makes me uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah.
She might not feel that way. That was just an example that popped into my mind.
No, but it's interesting because it's a different it's a different way of thinking once your kid becomes an adult, because it's you they're not dependent on you for all their beliefs and morals and all those kind of things, and they get to have their own, right?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about, that continuum.
If it's not boundaries or things that make you uncomfortable with adult children, is there certain things that you can do to have boundaries or hold your own and still maintain a healthy relationship, especially emotional
yes, close? Yes, I think by saying what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So say, you know, if I had my druthers, if I had what I wanted, I would speak to you every single day for an hour. Now, I realize that you don't have that kind of time. You know, you're working full time. I'm retired, you know, or whatever the situation is. And said, what would be realistic? You know, and they might say, well, a call once a week would be realistic.
Yeah.
And you might compromise or you might leave it as a call, depending on what's really possible.
Yeah. That's where my mom and I ended up after.
Yeah.
Because I live far from her. But
it's really knowing yourself, knowing your needs, and also listening to the other person's needs.
Yeah. I think, that's true. I mean, for me, I think personally, it's hard for me to communicate my needs because I always feel that I might hurt my daughter's feelings by saying, you know, this is, you know, that's not one of my values. That's not. But it can be yours.
Yes.
But at the same time, we are different people, right? So.
Yes. And it's I mean, the intimacy and irritation go hand in hand. You know, who are the people you get angry at? Your coworkers, the people you see daily.
Hi, my name's Denise Claddy. I'm from Redondo Beach, California. And this is my 12th trip to the ranch. It's one of my favorite places in the world. I love coming here at all different seasons. I get to be grateful for the rain and the sunshine and the heat and the wind and the birds and all of the wildlife. But most of all, I think it's the connection with nature and being able to stop and unplug and look people in the eye and have wonderful conversations and also have time for myself to walk in nature. One of my favorite things to do is walk in the labyrinth when I arrive and when I leave and notice the changes in how I feel and my perceptions about myself and about life. It's truly magical here. Not only is the food great and are the classes great, but the opportunity to just find the magic in life and in others. I hope you guys can join. It's amazing.
I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. I feel like you feel maybe safer with people that you know really love you and you love them, like which is your family members.
And that's one of the reasons why in-law relationships are harder. Because you know, with your child, you've been arguing since they could say no, right?
Right.
And you still love each other, and you know that, and it's firm. So the first argument you have with the in-law child, it's like, oh, my God, the world is coming to an end, when in fact it was a small disagreement.
Right. And I mean, I think currently in our world, too, there's more and more people choosing not to get married. And sometimes, so that's a whole different relationship because you still just have your one child to have a relationship with.
Well, yes and no, because there are relationships where people don't get married, but they are sort of
cohabitating.
They're very much a couple.
Right.
And that can be for either generation, by the way. And then you would treat it much like, I mean, I think it's always wise, anybody that's brought into my house, I want to be gracious to.
Right.
Because why not?
Right. No.
You know, it doesn't serve me not to be gracious.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of my favorites.
But it's also, you could find out very interesting things about people that you didn't think you would like.
Right, that's true. And that goes back to the word curious that you used earlier. Yes. So now, I have no idea how old you are, but at my age now, like I have my daughter, but I have my parents too still. Yes. And I don't want to say that I want to parent my parents, but a lot of people around my age now are starting to deal with aging parents. Right. And how do you, what advice do you have for that? Because, you know, my mom has got a form of dementia now, and my dad's health isn't as good. You know, they probably shouldn't be living on their own. But do you have any advice for something like that? Because, you know, they still want to live on their own. They're still very right. independent, but it's probably not the best idea.
So I would say I was the sandwich generation with older parents. Right. Kids. And some people are actually the BLT generation because they have the young ones they're still bringing up, their adult children and their parents.
Right, yeah.
So I would say we've been juggling with this for many years. Mm-hmm. Many of us have, not all of us. You do the best you can. You can enlist the help of your adult children.
Mm-hmm.
You can enlist the help of your siblings if you're lucky enough to have them. You can enlist the help of neighbors. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever resources you can bring to bear. And then there are also the paid resources, you know, social workers, et cetera, to help. It's a tough time of life because you do have a lot of obligations.
Right. And I don't know how long ago this interview was I heard you do, but where you talked about how you ride your bike every day.
I do.
And some of your kids might think that that's kind of dangerous and kind of risky.
I do ride my bike every day, and I have made one compromise to my age, which is I ride only on bike paths now. I used to do all my errands by bike. Mm-hmm. And that was because one of my children chastised me one day, and I happened to have a doctor's appointment. So I love the bike riding. It's my psychotherapy. And every day something wonderful happens. You know, I'll see a beautiful sunset or something. It'll be just fabulous, and it just does wonders for me. So I said to the doctor, what should I do? And he said, well, just be a little more judicious. And that's how I came to that compromise. So I think the name of the game in aging is not ending everything, is constantly asking, how can I do what I want to do in a different way? So, for example, I am no longer particularly interested in making these family gatherings of 20, 25 people at holidays. And I have exported that to my children.
Right.
Some people export it to the, telephone. Could you send me, please, to a restaurant, you know?
Yeah. And the example of you riding the bike, too. I mean, I think that really speaks to as your parents get older, because that brings you a lot of joy. And I mean, that's quality of life for you. And yes, life is a risk, right? So there are risks, but the quality of your life and the joy that it brings you, you know, if your kids can see that that outweighs the risk, you know?
Right. Well, also, you know, your parents are adults and they can make decisions. Now, just you disagree with your daughter's decisions, they may disagree with your decisions.
Right.
I think where it gets tricky is with the keys to the car.
Yeah, that's what
because
we're going
through. Because not only, in my case, I'm endangering myself only, right? But the driving, and that is very simple because there are tests the physician can send the adult to, and if they don't pass the test, they shouldn't be driving.
Right. So that's I guess a little different. So I guess you have to weigh the pros and cons a little bit.
Right. But it will be a difficult discussion. But many adults make a compromise. They don't drive at night. They only drive in places they know. This is before they get to the point where they shouldn't be driving at all, that they self-control themselves.
So I'm curious about the in-laws book that you wrote. Did the publisher come up with the don't roll your eyes part too? Or did you come up with that?
No, that was actually great fun. I sent out a missive to all my colleagues and my family. Mm-hmm. And the editor had said, let's pick it along the same line, the title, you know, don't roll your eyes, you know, make it similar. Right. And my son actually, I offered them a free meal.
Okay.
For the contribution of the title. And my son actually picked the title.
Oh, that's great.
I still owe him the meal.
You still owe him that meal? And the book's been out for a while. So I think another issue that I know with my daughter, myself, and my parents, the three generations of us, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, is each generation is so much different. Like, I still find myself getting frustrated with my parents because they refused to use a cell phone. It would make life so much easier. Uh-huh. But then I look at my daughter getting really frustrated with me because I'm not as hip with social media and the things that she grew up with. So I think those things can add a challenge to relationships and the generational thing.
I would say that one thing that has happened in my own life is that a couple of my techie, well, one in particular, techie in-law kids actually bought me the computer stuff and taught me how to use it.
Yeah.
But I was willing to learn, particularly because it was my second book that they had moved from the yellow pad to the, you know, but that is one way is, and another is getting an easy phone. Maybe they only do a flip-top phone.
Right,
rather than the fancy phones. It's the best you can do, but it is a whole different way of communicating.
Yeah, and I'll have to say that you're not retired. You're still teaching and writing. And so I think it's a little different too because most people most of my friends, their parents are retired and are not nearly as engaged as you seem to be. So I think that makes a huge difference too.
Many senior centers have help desks, desks. And, or you could give them with the phone a subscription to a help desk. In other words, that could be your gifts for now. And, but it would have to be if they were wanting to do it.
Right.
It might be. And then you could even do one of those trial periods and see if they like it. Yeah. I know that my kids asked me, when my husband died, they asked me to get, I'm not advertising here.
But that Apple Watch thing that does,
yeah, that will call if I fall. And so I thought, you know, if it makes them more comfortable, why don't I wear it?
Right, yeah.
By the way, it did fall and it didn't call them.
Oh, it did. No, that's great.
No, I fell on the other side.
Wow. Well, that's...
It's not a perfect solution, but it's a solution.
It is a solution. Yeah, like or having buzzers in people's homes, too, is... If they choose to still live alone, that's a compromise you can make as well.
That's my whole thing about finding other ways. This takes a lot of creativity.
Right.
And these are just examples of the kind of creativity. You may not be able to get the whole ball of wax, but you can get part of it.
Another thing I heard you say is that you were talking about parents still being human beings that still have opinions and choices and can make a decision. You said there's most decisions, there's a lot of gray area.
And that's where we get into trouble because it's in that gray area. We don't have trouble deciding to ride on the right or left side of the road, right?
Right. It's black and white,
It's pretty bad. Unless, of course, as it did when Sweden switched over, it had some economic implications. But mostly, when we go to England, we know to drive on the left and here on the right. Many decisions are not simple like that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's why they're decisions, because they have options and adults will differ how they make. When safety enters, that's when you might need to have a third party, a professional come. But people do make autonomous decisions.
Right. Yeah.
And they will be different.
Yeah. And I think it also helps when people still have purpose in their life too. Because I think that adult children are probably raising families and going to work every day. And so, you know, if their parents also have something that's motivating them, it helps people to communicate and still.
Right. I would say that you know, when I was young with young children, I went down to Florida to visit my in-laws. And I said, nobody does anything here. 10 years later, I go down and I say, oh, my God, everybody's a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing had changed.
Right.
What is, I saw that they helped their friends. The ones who could drive drove them to the classes or whatever. Or they would bake something for a sick friend. All of that does give purpose to life. So anything that you could do to encourage your parents to be in whatever group there is available, whether it's a church or a religious or something like that, there is so much need in this world, and it gives people so much happiness to volunteer. So I agree with you. Purpose.
Yeah, there's the whole thing. These you've heard of the blue zones. It's a big research now about the communities in the world that have the most people living over 100. And you know, the main thing is they live in community, and that the people who are 100 years and older still have purpose in their lives. They're still valued by their family and their opinions and what they contribute. So,
there's something for us to learn by that.
There's a lot for us.
Right. Actually, both the studies show that both generations benefit health-wise from good relationships.
Right.
And I do want to say, even if you are infirm and can't leave your home, there are wonderful volunteer opportunities in terms of visiting other people who are in the home, maybe helping a young person with their homework.
Right.
So there really are opportunities. Sometimes it's hard to find them, and maybe you could help your older adult parents find them.
It does. I mean, I think it's helping other people is what really brings you joy, meaning, and purpose in your life, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So do you have any like bullet point advice for people with parenting and adult children, or your adult relationships with adult children?
The first I'd say is know the environment, because whatever was true in your age, it has changed. Yes. Whether you were born in the horse and buggy age and now I see planes fly.
Right.
But I actually had an interesting experience. I was babysitting for my 6 and 8 year old grandchildren, and I was making arrangements with another parent. And my daughter was on the chain, and she said, "Mom, don't make such a long explanation. These people are busy working. Just say, I'll meet you at 5.
Yeah.
And that was so interesting, because when I had taught at Bentley University, and they were first doing international teams, they were teaching us to always say something personal.
Right.
And that was so you knew you could relate, you know, I'll be leaving work early because it's Christmas. And then the person can say, well, it's Christmas and so forth on the other side of the world. So interesting, times change. So number one, know the environment, because if you advise your kid on something like to take a job with a big company and stay the rest of your life, they'll laugh at you. That isn't happening anymore as often. The second thing is know yourself and understand why you want things, you know, why you're asking this. Are you asking this to change their mind or because you have a need? And if so, express that. And then think about reality, not fantasy. You have the fantasy that you and your daughter and the husband would go out to eat every night. That probably is not going to happen in America.
Right.
It might happen in other countries, but probably not here. So, again, deal with reality, not fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, let's see, just remember that good relationships are not necessarily smooth relationships.
Mm.
That is so important. And have dreams for yourself and fulfill those, and look for immortality in the goodness you leave on the world. What you were saying, do kindness for people, not necessarily through your children, but also through your children, but not all of that. And other, I'd say one of the great tips to use is to reframe a situation. So let's say your child sends you a card for Christmas. You could say, This is not. It's Christmas and I get this lousy card. You know, mm-hmm. those T-shirts. Okay. Yeah. Or you could say, wasn't it nice that they remembered me even though they couldn't come to me? And right. I would say it serves parents well to interpret things in the best possible light.
Right.
Oh, I could go on and on, but that gives you an idea.
Yeah, find a silver lining always.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, for me, the one thing that I kind of stick to is that, like, it's really love, and you just have to. I mean, your kids, like, I hope my daughter no matter what, you're going to love your kids, and they're going to love you. So, it's worth making the effort to work it out because it's important.
Yes. I would say I just have to make a slight correction.
Okay.
There's an uptick in what's called people who get estranged from their parents and child.
Yes, there are.
And I agree with you. I just want to mention this because not everyone thinks they have both that solid love basis. But if you keep reaching out, maybe over time, that mm-hmm. love that you originally had will come back. So,
yeah, you're right. I do know some people that are estranged from their adult children. Right. So that's a good point too. So,
great.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time today to talk to me. It's been really enjoyable. It's gone by so fast.
Good. Well, thank you so much for having me.
And I look forward to hopefully you'll come back to the ranch one of these days.
Yes, I certainly hope so. I'd love to.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I threw your name in the hat last week, so. Yeah.
Oh, you did. You done good.
Yes, so. Okay. So thank you
that's
so much.
That's a good deed for that last week.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
I appreciate you. As the parent of a grown daughter who is recently married, and as a son of two parents in their mid-80s, today's conversation was very relatable for me. Families have always been complicated, as all relationships are. But then when you start adding in-laws and extended families, sometimes it's beyond complicated. I was reminded in today's conversation that the life experience of someone in their 80s is certainly different than the life experience of someone in their 50s or 60s, which is certainly different than the life experience of someone in their 30s. In fact, the world has changed so rapidly that even if I went back to being 30, the experience would be different for me than it was when I was 30. The best advice that I think I got from Ruth's conversation today is to be curious and to ask questions. All relationships can benefit from listening, hearing, and wanting to understand the other person's perspective. Ruth mentioned that she loves to ride her bike and she gets a lot of joy out of riding her bike. Now, as a woman in her 80s, there's some risk involved and her kids are obviously uncomfortable with that risk. But Ruth reminds us that parents and even grandparents are still people and they still want to enjoy their lives. Her kids have compromised and realized that the joy she gets in riding her bike outweighs the risk. I'm going through a similar situation with my aging parents. I'm uncomfortable with them living independently on their own in their own home, but I can see the joy that this brings them outweighs my discomfort, at least for now. So I hope today's conversation gave you lots of things to ponder. I know I certainly have lots of things to think about. Until next time, this is Barry wishing you health and daily joy.